basic necessities like food, shelter, and healthcare is not there. These people are risking their lives to go to a completely different country to try to find help. And think about it. Here in the U.S., so many of us live in this bubble where we, at least for now, have enough food and water and something like health care if we're lucky. How bad would things have to get for each one of us to leave everything that we know and love, places where we've spent large parts of our lives, and go to a completely new foreign country, especially one that we know hates us and rejects us, and the government is demonizing us and going to great lengths to keep us out, and
if we manage
to get in, is going to terrorize us and kick us out. That's how bad it is for people living in poverty already.
Well, Dar Jamil, we want to thank you for being with us. We're going to go with you to part two, and we'll post online at democracynow.org Dar Jamil's new book, The End of ICE, Bearing Witness and Finding Meaning in the Path of Climate Disruption. We'll link to your piece. Over one-tenth of the global population could face drinking water lack by 2030.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee will meet Wednesday, the 17th at 4:30 p.m. for the month of July.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sun Ra Orchestra live Monday, July 15th and Tuesday, July 16th at 8:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Just back from their European tour celebrating band director Marshall Allen's 95th birthday, the 15-member Sun Ra Orchestra will play two shows of experimental cosmic jazz and improvisational music. Again, that's the Sun Ra Orchestra, Monday, July 15th, and Tuesday, July 16th, at 8:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard.
The time is 5:01 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland City Hall evacuated yet again over a bomb scare.
Portland police say they will not cooperate with ICE.
Trump over the weekend had some nasty things to say about four notable women in Congress, and tonight we hear from each of them.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 15th, 2019. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Ken Jones. Portland City Hall was evacuated for the second time in a month today after police say a suspicious package was left at the building. Nearby streets have been blocked off and neighboring buildings evacuated as the explosive disposal unit assessed the situation. The bomb threat called in earlier this month was deemed not credible and possessed no harm to the public.
The Portland Police Bureau is saying it will not enforce immigration laws or help with ICE raids. The Portland Police say they want to continue building trust and community with others. Oregon state law does not allow any agency to detect people of foreign citizenship. These raids are expected to apprehend upwards of 2,000 undocumented immigrants in different U.S. cities. Many of the cities are in states that grant protection to immigrants, Oregon being one of them.
A rule put forth by the Trump administration, which is scheduled to become effective tomorrow, mandates that migrants fleeing persecution or torture in their home countries will no longer be eligible to apply for asylum at the U.S. border with Mexico. Instead, they'll have to apply from Mexico or another country outside of their country of origin. The measure is going in as an interim final rule, a procedure in which a government agency has deemed it necessary to adopt a rule without first issuing a proposal or opening the matter up to the public comment. As such, the rule becomes law upon official publication, which in this case is scheduled to take place tomorrow. The new rule will amend U.S. laws governing the right to seek asylum, which have been in place for nearly 40 years. The laws were written with several provisions from the Geneva Refugee Convention, which was widely adopted after the Second World War. For more information about this new rule or to add your commentary to the public record, concerned parties may contact Lauren Alder Reed, R-E-I-D, at the Executive Office for Immigration Review in Falls Church, Virginia. Their phone number is 703-305-0289, and the reference code for this issue is docket number 19-0504.
Kaiser Permanente employees rallied last Wednesday in Portland to express their concerns about staffing decisions at the health organization's hospitals. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service and KABU, Amara Moore has this report.
Workers at Kaiser Permanente rallied Wednesday over concerns about staffing changes some say are leaving hospitals and medical offices shorthanded. Service employees, International Union Local 49 members, are picketing at Kaiser Permanente's North Portland Medical Campus and picketed at the Clackamas Campus 2 weeks ago. One issue for employees is disbanding of the Clackamas Center's SAFE team, which specialized in transporting high-risk patients. Stephen Hawkins, a certified nursing assistant who was part of the team, says when a patient recently fell, there wasn't a set protocol for how to help him.
It was disheartening to me because we have the equipment available to take care of this properly, but now we had to motivate people and pull them from what they were already doing to come down and help this person, and it actually delayed a response.
While the SAFE team no longer exists, Kaiser spokesman Michael Foley says specialized training has been given to all employees involved in patient care, increasing the number of staff members capable of providing safe transport. The rally took place last Wednesday. Another concern for hospital staff is the decision to close the Atrium Cafe at the Portland campus. Carl Pitzer was a cook there who led the cafe's transition to a plant-based kitchen. The cafe was popular, even attracting people from the surrounding community. Pitzer says some patients have to stay on campus all day, sometimes with specific dietary needs, and their only source for a hot meal now is if a family member goes off campus.
They have to sit there the whole day, and now they've got nothing except a vending machine. A vending machine can't answer your questions. We have such a good relationship with our patients.
Kaiser responded that the Atrium Cafe grew beyond its designed capacity and was closed rather than making costly renovations. It notes laid-off staff receive pay and benefits for a year. Jennifer Forrester, a medical assistant on the Portland campus, says the rally-goers today are calling on more support from Kaiser for its workforce.
We're looking at staffing in general across the board and how Kaiser needs to put the resources into the employees who do the work to take care of patients and give high-quality health care to our members and the community.
For the KABU Evening News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Imara Moore.
While most of the attention on the Oregon legislature was centered on Republican lawmakers fleeing the state, several landmark wins were pushed through by majority Democrats just in time. Public schools are set to receive an additional $1 billion per year from a new business tax. Opponents of the tax plan, however, urge voters to overturn it. Through a new state family and medical leave insurance program, Oregon workers will be able to receive up to 12 weeks of paid time off per year to care for a new baby or sick family member. In addition, teens charged with Measure 11 crimes will no longer automatically be referred to adult court and will gain opportunities to have their sentences reconsidered. Statewide rent control, limits on polluting diesel engines, legal drivers' licenses for undocumented immigrants, and an end to single-family zoning laws in Oregon cities are also some of the major changes stemming from a final Democratic push. Several of those bills passed with Republican support.
Donald Trump used racist language to target four progressive Democratic congresswomen on Sunday, but his social media assault isn't over. While Trump did not specify who he was attacking on Twitter directly, it's assumed his tweets were directed towards four freshman congresswomen of color, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Ayanna Pressley, all of whom have been outspoken critics of the Trump administration. Trump implied that the women weren't born in America and suggested they they go back to their, quote, broken and crime-infested countries. Ocasio-Cortez, Tlaib, and Presley were all born in the U.S., while Ilhan was born in Somalia. All four women are U.S. citizens. The freshman congresswomen, who go by the nickname The Squad, spoke at a press conference today to respond to Trump's racist attacks. Here's Congresswoman Tlaib.
I want to send a message of gratitude and thanks to the solidarity that we have received from every corner of our country, from our colleagues to our neighbors. We are grateful for your solidarity, your encouragement, and your support in the face of the most recent xenophobic, bigoted remarks from the occupant of our White House. I will always refer to him as the occupant, as he is only occupying space. He does not embody the grace, the empathy, the compassion, the integrity that that office requires and that the American people deserve. That being said, I encourage the American people and all of us in this room and beyond to not take the bait. This is a disruptive distraction from the issues of care, concern, and consequence to the American people, that we were sent here with a decisive mandate from our constituents to work on. Everything from reducing the cost of prescription drugs, to addressing our affordable housing crisis, to ensuring that the American people have more than health insurance, but health care. More recently, thanks to the partnership of Chairman Elijah Cummings and the advocacy of myself and a coalition of advocates I've worked with for decades, we held the first hearing on childhood trauma. And in sitting in that hearing, as we heard about the many manifestations and iterations of childhood trauma in the wake of the public health crisis and epidemic that is gun violence, in the wake of PTSD, in the wake of those battling substance abuse disorder and a host of other things, it was impossible not to think of the trauma that is being inflicted upon children every day at our border. At the end of the day, if we improve the conditions of children in a cage, they are still in a cage. And we are viscerally, vigorously, and fundamentally opposed to the criminalizing, the vilifying, the mass detention and deportation of migrant families who are simply doing what is their legal human right, and that is to seek asylum. In the tradition of who we say we are as a country, a beacon of light and hope and of refuge. This is simply a disruption and a distraction from the callous, chaotic, and corrupt culture of this administration all the way down. We want to get back to the business of the American people and why we were sent here, reducing the cost of prescription drugs, addressing the public health crisis and epidemic that is gun violence, addressing the racial wealth gap, and yes, making sure that families stay together. I also would like to just underscore the fact that despite the occupant of the White House attempts to marginalize us and to silence us, please know that we are more than four people. We ran on a mandate to advocate for and to represent those ignored, left out, and left behind. Our squad is big. Our squad includes any person committed to building a more equitable and just world. And that is the work that we want to get back to. And given the size of this squad and this great nation, we cannot, we will not be silenced. And now I'll invite Representative Omar to offer a few words as well.
Thank you, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. This country was founded on the radical idea that we are created equal and endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights. And yes, we have a long way before we fully live up to those values. It is for this reason precisely that we have to take action when a president is openly violating the oath he took to the Constitution of the United States and the core values we aspire to. As Martin Luther King said, all we say to America is, be true to what you say on paper. I believe this is a pivotal moment in our country. The eyes of history is watching us. Right now, the president is carrying out mass deportation raids across this country in each one of our districts. Right now, the president is committing human rights abuses at the border, keeping children in cages and having human beings drinking out of toilets. This president, who has been credibly accused of committing multiple crimes, including colluding with foreign government to interfere with our election. This is a president who has overseen the most corrupt administration in our history and pursued an agenda to allow millions of Americans to die from a lack of health care while he transfers millions of dollars in tax cuts to corporations. This is a president who has said, grab women by the peace. This is a president who's called black athletes sons of bitches. This is a president who has called black people who come from black and brown countries fish holes. This is a president who has equated neo-Nazis with those who protest against them in Charlottesville. This is a president who has openly violated the very value our country aspires to uphold: equality under the law, religious liberty, equal protection, and protection from persecution. And to distract from that, he's launching a blatantly racist attack on four duly elected members of the United States of House of Representatives, all of whom are women of color. This is the agenda of white nationalists. Whether it is happening in chat rooms or it's happening on national TV, and now it's reached the White House garden. He would love nothing more than to divide our country based on race, religion, gender, orientation, or immigration status. Because this is the only way he knows he can prevent the solidarity of us working together across all of our differences. The only way to prevent us confronting the problems our country is facing, whether it is healthcare, climate change, student debt, or our endless wars. This is his plan to pit us against one another. This is how he can continue to enrich his friends and distract us from the detrimental policies that his administration is pushing forth. So we can either continue to enable this president and report on the bile of garbage that comes out of his mouth, or we can hold him accountable to his crimes. We can continue to turn a blind eye of the multiple crimes he's accused of. We can stand while he violates people's basic human rights and the responsibility that his administration has for the deaths of children on our border, or we can take action. I have not made impeachment central to my election or my tenure, but since the day that I'd gotten elected, I'd said to people, it is not if he will be impeached, but when. So it is time for us to stop allowing this president to make a mockery out of our Constitution. It's time for us to impeach this president. So now we're going to have Alexandria Ocasio, Congresswoman Alexandria.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'll try to keep things as brief, I guess, as I can. But who knows when I get on a roll.
Time to help produce it. If
my father took me to the reflecting pool here. We were on a road trip from New York to Florida to visit family. And I've told this story before, but it was my first time ever visiting Washington, D.C. And it was my only time visiting Washington, D.C. for years, if not decades. And he rested me on the side of the reflecting pool and had my toes dip in the water. And he had me look at the Washington Monument, had me look at the Capitol, had me look at the entirety of the capital of our great country. And he looked at everything and he pointed to all of it and he said, this belongs to all of us. This belongs to you and it belongs to me. And so the first note that I want to tell children across this country is that no matter what the president says, this country belongs to you. Mm-hmm. And it belongs to everyone. And today, that notion, that very notion, was challenged. This weekend, that very notion was challenged. So I am not surprised when the president says that four sitting members of Congress should, quote, go back to their own country, when he has authorized raids without warrants on thousands of families across this country. I am not surprised that he uses the rhetoric that he does when he violates international human rights and takes thousands of children away from their families. I am not surprised that he has turned our public education system under the leadership of Betsy DeVos into a cash cow to enrich himself and his friends. I am not surprised when he corrupts via the Secretary of Transportation. I am not surprised at what he's doing. But I also know that we're focused on making it better, because we don't leave the things that we love. And when we love this country, what that means is that we propose the solutions to fix it.
That was Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez responding to Donald Trump's racist remarks at a press conference held this afternoon.
A Virginia judge sentenced the man who drove his car into a group of counter-protesters at the 2017 white nationalist rally in Charlottesville to a second life sentence. White supremacist James Alex Fields Jr. had originally been sentenced to life after pleading guilty to federal charges. Civil rights activist Heather Heyer died from injuries caused by Fields, and dozens of additional counter-protesters were injured.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on the recent protests here in Portland over ICE raids and conditions at the border. At 6 o'clock tonight, it's Labor Radio. 6:30 on Prison Pipeline, Adam Carpinelli interviews Masai Ehosi, former Black Liberation Army prisoner of war. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather, some showers before 11 p.m., then patchy drizzle, and we'll have a low around 62. Tomorrow, another drizzly day with a slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a high near 76. Today in history, in the year 1099, Christian soldiers of the First Crusade captured the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem after the final assault of a difficult siege. And Trump's favorite bully pulpit, Twitter, was launched on this day in 2006, becoming one of the largest social media platforms in the world. Remember Covfefe? And the anonymous quote of the day: on Twitter, we get excited if someone follows us. In real life, we get really scared and run away.
Our old friend Jim Hightower reports on a new and unusual disease.
Unfortunately, an exotic flu epidemic has broken out in Washington, D.C. Dubbed the Canadian Hot Sauce Flu, it uniquely afflicts a particular group of Democratic office holders and operatives. CHS flu renders its victims weaker than Canadian hot sauce, leaving them unable to stand boldly for the workaday majority they're supposed to represent. Instead, the afflicted, who are mostly old-line party leaders, are reduced to don't-rock-the-boat corporatism and conservative appeasement when advancing policy ideas. They fear that anything stronger will spook centrist voters. This breakout is a reaction to the recent surge of younger, progressive voters and office holders openly pushing real populist change, including a Green New Deal, taxing the obscene wealth of corporate profiteers, public financing of our public elections, breaking up monopolies, restoring labor rights, free higher education and tech training, and Medicare for all. Far from alienating the electorate, these proposals are generating majority support precisely because they are bold and clearly would benefit, well, the majority. Yet, the protectors of the old money-soaked politics-as-usual system are wailing that the party must move to the center rather than to the left. But wait, their mythological center is way over to the right, hunkered down with corporate interests and blocking working-class progress. This is Jim Hightower saying, the future of the party doesn't require moving left, center, or right. These are ideological positions. Instead, the Dems should move out to the grassroots reality of ordinary Americans. People there are envisioning, electing, and beginning to enact a true progressive agenda to advance our nation's democratic ideals of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. That is a politics of integrity, a politics that is worthy of all of our involvement.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
And on another historical note, on this day in 1954, Alan Turing committed suicide after being chemically castrated to avoid imprisonment. That was under charges from Britain's Victorian laws against homosexuality. Today, the Bank of England chose Turing to be the face of the country's 50-pound note. Turing was a mathematician who advanced the development of artificial intelligence and computing. His work played a large role in switching the advantage to the Allies in the Battle of the Atlantic during World War II. Turing went up against 989 candidates for the spot on the 50-pound note, including figures such as Stephen Hawking, Ada Lovelace, and Margaret Thatcher. Turing will be the first LGBTQ person to be featured on a UK banknote.
June 15th and 16th are Prime Days at Amazon, an event expected to bring in approximately $5.8 billion in revenue for the company. Some employees are using the event to protest their pay and working conditions at Amazon facilities. The strike started in Germany this morning, with protesters walking out and chanting the slogan, "No more discounts on our incomes." Other Prime Day walkouts include Amazon locations in the UK, Spain, Poland, and across the US. In Shakopee, Minnesota, many Amazon employees are Muslim immigrants from East Africa and are demanding prayer spaces and new provisions to protect workers from exhaustion during the period of Ramadan fasting. While Amazon increased minimum wages to $15 per hour, the average Amazon employee made just $34,000 in 2017, compared to the nation's median household income of $61,000 in the same year.
Well, if you hadn't heard, New York City faced a power outage that affected 72,000 people on Saturday evening. It lasted for 3 hours, with power restored around midnight. Many businesses, entertainment events, and trains stopped unexpectedly, affecting tourists and residents. The blackout was on the 42nd anniversary of the 1977 New York power outage, and the New York power company Con Edison says it was from a mechanical failure, although the exact cause for the outage is still unknown. It could take weeks to find out how greatly it affected most of the city.
Now let's find out what's happening this week in water.
How did a mule save a fish? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
On Saturday, Barry, a slow-moving hurricane, came ashore in Louisiana. While the storm's winds were strong, officials were warning mostly about flooding.
The heavy rains are connected to man-made climate change. Time reports that warmer waters in the Gulf generate increased evaporation that provides more rain for a storm to dump when it makes landfall. NOAA said that surface temperatures in the Gulf were among the highest in recent decades.
Those temperatures also increase storm strength because warmer air holds more water. One meteorologist said that the atmosphere is like a sponge, and because there is now a bigger sponge, it holds more moisture.
In addition, the previous 12 months have been the wettest since record-keeping began 125 years ago. The Mississippi River is still transporting all the water that inundated the Midwest earlier this year.
Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said in a tweet that Barry would be the first time a hurricane hit when rivers were still rising.
As of early July 14th, CNN was reporting that over 70% of Barry's moisture was still sitting offshore and could make its way inland over the next 36 hours.
July 20th is the 50th anniversary of the first manned lunar landing, and although the moon has gone decades without visitors, now several countries are making travel plans, and one reason may be water.
India is set to launch an unmanned craft this week to land on the lunar South Pole, an area that's thought to contain ice in deep craters, according to the Washington Post.
The water could be used by astronauts for drinking. It could also be broken down into oxygen for breathing and hydrogen for rocket propellant for future missions into space.
Scientific American reports that NASA's chief scientist currently estimates that there may be 1 to 200 million tons of ice in the moon's dark craters, and one of the questions is how it got there and whether it did so all at once or might be still going on today.
The planned Indian mission to the moon has received some criticism, as many residents in that country are suffering from a severe water crisis.
The shipping industry has been criticized for using heavy fuel oil, a cheap form of petroleum that produces immense exhaust. Shipping is responsible for about 3% of global carbon emissions each year.
There are already some ships that are powered by electricity rather than burning oil, but most of those are ferries traveling short distances to ports where they can recharge.
Now, a hybrid cruise ship is making its way to the Arctic. The first of its kind, the boat can travel much greater distances by burning natural gas and generating electricity, similar to how a Prius uses gasoline and stores power in batteries.
As CBC reports, it would be very difficult to move most of the shipping industry to 100% electric because it would require massive battery packs in addition to expensive upgrades to the power grid at ports.
However, the industry is seeing some movement to other options, including using giant kites and sails to harvest wind power at sea.
Permafrost is soil that has been frozen for long periods, and as the climate warms, it's melting, releasing long-stored carbon into the atmosphere.
Now there's another consequence of the thawing. The Guardian reports that prospectors are digging up tusks of ancient woolly mammoths that are exposed as the permafrost in northern Russia melts.
The Chinese market for the mammoth ivory from Russia is rapacious, adding up to about $50 million each year. It's estimated that there are 500,000 tons of mammoth fossils in the ground, with only a small fraction having been unearthed so far.
Some Russian officials reject the call to regulate the harvesting of ivory, saying it could harm local peoples who should have the right to collect the tusks and live off the proceeds.
Others are promoting Russian mammoth ivory as an alternative to poaching African elephants.
And finally, in 2016, a lightning strike caused a massive wildfire in Colorado's Rocky Mountains. The Hayden Fire torched 16,000 acres, and as the flames spread and the people evacuated, staff from Colorado Parks and Wildlife rushed in.
That's because a very rare fish, the Hayden Creek cutthroat trout, lived there. The fish contained the same genetic markers as specimens collected by early explorers in the late 1800s, the remains of which are housed at the Smithsonian.
The crew, with the help of firefighters, was able to retrieve about 200 trout that day, and most of the fish were taken to a hatchery. Surveys after the fire showed that not a single trout had survived in the creek.
Meanwhile, Colorado Parks and Wildlife were able to nurse the rescued fish back to health, and they spawned, saving the species.
But it wasn't good enough to keep them in tanks, and last week, 4,500 of the rare trout were transported up a steep 6-mile trail to the upper reaches of Hayden Creek by mule.
The mules were outfitted with special saddlebags of pressurized steel canisters that pumped oxygen into the water to keep the fish cozy. Four mules and dozens of volunteers endured hot sun and drenching rains to deposit the 4-inch trout at various points in the creek.
Josh Nehring, a biologist with the agency, said in a news release that they're looking to introduce the Hayden trout in other streams in Colorado because spreading them across the region makes them less vulnerable to extinction from future fire or flood.
The release is similar to a program being carried out to help the greenback cutthroat, the state fish of Colorado, that was also nearly extinct but is now making a comeback.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Waterworks Association. Discuss solutions for protecting and managing aging infrastructure at WIC19. Learn more at awwa.org/water infrastructure.
In other news from around the globe, at least 88 people have died along with tens of thousands of others who were displaced from their homes after torrential monsoon rains caused flooding and landslides across Nepal and South Asia. The heavy rains began on Thursday, forcing thousands to evacuate their homes after major rivers swelled to alarming levels. Photos of Nepal's Kathmandu Valley and the lowland Terai region show roads turning into fast-moving rivers and cars submerged in water. Approximately 16,520 homes have been displaced in Nepal, with the numbers continuing to rise. Regions in Nepal on the southern border have seen more than 16 inches of rain over the last few days, and there's no sign of it stopping anytime soon.
Renew, a wind and solar business in India, raised more than $1 billion this year. India has the fifth highest renewable power capacity in the world, and the country now has the cheapest solar power in the world and wants to expand in different areas. Renew's goal is to tackle pollution by using renewable energy that helps protect the environment.
Over 150 gun owners attended New Zealand's first gun buyback program in the wake of the Christchurch shootings last March. There are more than 250 buyback events scheduled nationwide in New Zealand this year alone. The buyback program exchanges the now banned weapons for cash, which will cost the government between $60 and $130 million. The weapons will be destroyed. Legislation to outlaw military-style semi-automatic weapons was introduced just 6 days after the deadly Christchurch mosque shooting that left 51 people dead and dozens injured. Australia implemented a similar gun buyback program in 1996 after a gunman killed 35 people. Gun owners have until December to turn over their now banned weapons.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native women help organize and lead a Lights for Liberty event in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to draw attention to U.S. immigration issues. Women with the grassroots groups, Three Sisters Collective, and Tiwa Women United joined other ethnic and religious groups Friday, along with concerned citizens of the Albuquerque community, at a protest outside an Immigration and Customs Enforcement office. Speakers called for the closure of detention centers and humane treatment of migrants. The demonstration included a hand drum song and shadow puppet play to represent voices of people in immigration detention.
They're coming for me. They're coming for me.
Autumn Gomez is with Three Sisters Collective. She says as a Puebla woman, she finds ways to uplift the community and advocate for Indigenous people, including those currently in the immigration system.
It's just important to remember the humanity of our people, to remember that colonization is unfortunately still having such a huge impact.
The demonstration ended after sunset as people marched to the gates of the ICE office holding candles. Episcopal priest Carolyn Metzler asked people to lament by wailing and with prayer.
Carry the blessing outward. Through you, through others, be in solidarity. Blessed be.
The Albuquerque Lights for Liberty event was one of hundreds held across the United States Friday, organized by advocates and concerned citizens as immigration issues make headlines and the Trump administration moves forward on its plans and policy. Leaders of five Oklahoma tribes signed a joint resolution Friday responding to Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt's request to renegotiate gaming compacts. The Intertribal Council of the five civilized tribes signed the formal response in opposition. The governor recently announced in an editorial he wants to renegotiate compacts seeking more revenue from casinos. Leaders of the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Muskogee, and Seminole nations signed the resolution, expressing their disappointment the governor took the matter to the media before engaging with the tribes. The tribes also disagree with the governor that compacts will expire on January 1st, 2020, but say they will automatically renew. The governor released a statement responding to the tribe's resolution, standing by his plans and adding that he's committed to open discussion with the tribes. Community members gathered in Toppenish, Washington Sunday to remember Rosenda Strong. The 32-year-old went missing in October. Authorities found her remains in a freezer within the Yakima Nation on July 4th. Her death is being investigated as a homicide. The Yakima Herald reports about 75 people gathered to remember Strong during the vigil calling for justice. Her family says she was a citizen of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla and planned to return her to the Umatilla Reservation for burial. People at the vigil say this is another case involving missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls across the country and are advocating for assistance from the public and authorities. Navajo lawmakers are starting their summer session on horseback Monday. Council delegates are riding to chambers in Window Rock from various locations. Some have spent multiple days riding across the Navajo Nation. The ride honors a longtime tradition of Navajo leaders. The council is scheduled to consider 7 pieces of legislation on the first day of the session. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the law offices of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanosky.com.
Support by the Wheelwright Museum, established in 1937, presenting exhibitions of contemporary and iconic Native art, currently accepting art donations for its 44th annual benefit auction in August. Info at wheelwright.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Monday, July 15th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kenzie Beard, Teresa Mitchell, Claire Ricciotto, and Imara Moore. The producer is Jim Thompson, and our engineer is Danielle Parks. The Interim Director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola, along with Ken Jones, and for the whole KBOO squad, have a very good night. In Depth is next.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
As the White House threatened a national sweep of refugees, a crowd of 800 gathered at the Portland ICE Detention Center on Southwest McAdam Street. Undocumented speakers Pedro and Hector, who could not risk revealing their full names, spoke to the crowd about conditions in ICE detention. KBOO's Teresa Mitchell was there.
Hello, everyone. Just want to make sure everybody can hear me. I want to start by thanking God and everyone for your presence here tonight. Your presence means so much to me and my family and everyone in the fight. I want to send my thoughts and prayers to the family and friends of Betsy Moreno, a mother from Cornelius who was just recently detained by ICE and will be awaiting her first hearing at the Tacoma ICE Detention Center. And I dedicate this speech to her. On October 2016, approximately 4 a.m., I woke up to loud knocking at my front door. I walked out in my pajamas to meet three ICE officers in full tactical gear. They advised me there was a federal warrant out for my arrest and added that they were not required to show me a warrant because it was an administrative warrant. They said, turn around and put your hands behind your head. My wife came to the door and stood in disbelief. My four-year-old daughter was sleeping in her room, thank God. I was transported from my home in Beaverton to here, the building which we stand in front of today. The arresting officer told me, we need to take care of some administrative paperwork first. After a day and a half of curling into my pajamas for warmth, trying to sleep on a cold concrete slab in there, I was confused to see the officer outside my jail cell lining up other detainees for transportation. As the officer started frisking us one by one, I approached the officer and I explained I had wrapped my body underneath my clothes with tissue paper during the night for insulation to stay warm. He gave me an angry look, but then said, thanks for being honest. After a day and a half, I was then prepared to be transported to the Tacoma Detention Center. I automatically became the translator not only for the other detainees I was held with, but for the ICE officers too. I was sought out by ICE agents to translate various protocols and legal information to the other detainees. I thought I was working hard enough as a de-escalation supervisor for a travel company I was working for at the time. And boy, did I not have the slightest clue as to how much harder I was going to have to work to survive at the detention center. With the skills that I brought, I made the ICE officer's job a whole lot easier. I worked tirelessly day and night for 30 days straight by myself and with limited contact with my private immigration lawyer. Even though a terrible sickness that I incurred from stress and horrible conditions that I was forced to live with, I felt like I couldn't give up. As a detainee, we are not entitled to legal representation nor interpretation services. Honestly, I felt like I was forced to be the legal representation and interpreter on behalf of the ICE staff. Needless to say, I earned the respect of the entire community of detainees I found myself living with. I learned so much from the fighting will to provide for your family as I got to know my Haitian, Guatemalan, Honduran, and Salvadorian brothers. With the grace of God, my lawyer and the presiding judge agreed to a low bond after reviewing my file, despite the federal prosecutor's recommendation for a higher bond, so that I would be held in detention rather than free while awaiting my third hearing. After paying the federal government the bond amount, I was released and reunited with my beautiful little girl, who was so confused and didn't know where I was when she woke up the next morning that I was taken away from her. All the way up until the morning that she saw me in my pajamas walking out of the Tacoma Immigration Detention Center. I thought the toughest part was over, but God had bigger plans for me. USCIS confiscated my DACA work permit, which consequently is linked to my driver's license. This is true for all DACA recipients. And at this point, I found myself unable to provide for my family without the legal means of transportation. To add insult to injury, the apartment that we were living in was gentrified, and the entire building was served with a no-cost eviction. More than 90 of our neighbors, including my family, were displaced. A new apartment lease with my wife was suddenly not an option because I was without a driver's license or identification. I didn't have proof of income because my employer had to lay me off and I had no social security number. I found myself in the streets of Southeast Portland, literally begging small business owners for any kind of work. And I knew that this was not the way, but I had no option. Then God answered my prayers and gave me a job as a janitor for a convenience store. I worked my way to merchandise manager, working 16-hour shifts alone for 2 years and sending money to support my daughter in Beaverton. I saved enough money to put myself in graduate school, and now I'm a full-time MAT student and a full-time teacher with the city of Portland. The students that I've taught have been deeply inspired by my story, and I have been deeply inspired by my students. I want the takeaway from my testimony tonight to be that the injustices that impact us at the U.S.-Mexico border are also directly impact your and my neighborhood. They impact members of the community in Gresham and Oregon City and Salem and Beaverton, Hillsboro, our brothers and sisters in Washington, California, and beyond. The reason to commit your time, energy, blood, sweat, and tears to shutting down ICE contracts across the nation are all around us. We want to remind the White House that whether they recognize it or not, we are real families that will continue to influence not only the future of this country, but also influence the way each and every one of the members of our communities live and do business. We are your teachers, we are your students, we are your brothers and sisters, and we are integrated into every aspect of this city and our surrounding cities and beyond. U.S. immigration law is broken, and USCIS is implementing the use of federal resources to remove our positive integration. If you feel the pain suffered by all of us in the words that I'm speaking today, then commit to reform the system, to reunite families, and to get our innocent children out of jail. Let's hear it for Hector one more time. Hector es comunidad. People like Hector makes community. And there are many just like Hector all around you. They are all around you. And some of you are actually here today. Within Hector's same lines of thought, I have a few things that I want to need to get off my chest. And my message tonight is simple. Do not get dehumanized by numbers. Do not get dehumanized by what you cannot see. Do not get dehumanized by secrecy. Do not get dehumanized by racism. Do not find comfort in what you cannot see. You see all the images of children and families in concentration camps, surrounded by fence, barbed wire. You feel compelled to do something, to call for action, to be here tonight, to demand for concentration camps to be shut down. And yes, they should be shut down. Shut detention camps now. Shut them down. Shut the camps now. 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 But calling for the shutdown of these facilities, of these concentration camps, is not that easy.
Since the creation of ICE, the federal government has set the policies that separate families and incarcerate children. This has been happening for many years, even before this administration. And those policies are affecting communities right here in Oregon, right here, right now. It's not only happening at the border, it's happening in at least 16 states all over the United States. Especially for children, the residential status and minor crime, such as smoking marijuana, or the trauma that they have endured to make it to the United States, becomes an excuse, an allegation, a reason for them to be detained and held in detention facilities all around the United States. It becomes a reason for them to be shifted from facility to facility all over the states. This is happening here, this is happening right now. And what do we want to do with those detention centers? We want to shut them down! Shut them down! Shut them down! Shut them down! But we don't do anything, or we don't say anything until we see the conditions that are happening out there at the border. And we do not become outraged because we cannot see it. I don't become outraged because I cannot see it. You don't become outraged because you cannot see it. But I tell you today, and you cannot see it because these detention centers, they operate in secrecy. They operate in secrecy. They operate in secrecy. So even if you cannot see it, you must stand up, fight back, and shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. Shut them down. So do not get dehumanized by secrecy. Do not get dehumanized by what politicians tell you. It's good that politicians go out there and they do their campaigns and they become champions of their cause, but question them, hold them accountable for what is actually happening here in Oregon. I'm gonna say something that is gonna bother a few of you. So a man named Chris Edmonds ran Senator Jeff Merkley's campaign in 2008. Chris Edmonds put Jeff Merkley in office in 2008. Chris Edmonds is on the board of directors at Morrison. But then Jeff Merkley cannot even go into any Morrison facility to assess the safety of these children. So he can go to Texas and he can go to Florida and he can make a great campaign about being the champion of closing the detention centers, but he cannot do it right here in Oregon. And it's good that all federal politicians go out there and do whatever they want to do. But first of all, take care of your own home, take care of your own constituents, take care of your own migrants in your own community, and demand them to shut Morrison down. Oh, but these kids have toothbrushes. Oh, but look at this kid. This kid has actually diapers. Oh, this other one actually got a school. A prison is a prison is a prison is a prison. Shut it down. Shut it down. Shut it down. Shut it down.
And you've been listening to a recording by Teresa Mitchell about the recent protest over the ICE raids and the conditions at the border. Bye.
Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland City Council Forum on Zenith Energy's Tar Sands Terminal, Monday, July 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the University of Portland Buckley Center in Portland. An oil terminal owned by Zenith Energy in Northwest Portland is under construction to nearly quadruple railcar loading capacity at what used to be an asphalt plant on the Willamette River. At the hearing, community organizations are preparing to speak out against Zenith and call on the Portland City Council to take action to stop Zenith in Portland. Again, that's the Portland City Council Forum on Zenith Energy's Tar Sands Terminal, Monday, July 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the University of Portland Buckley Center, 5000 North Willamette Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Joining me, as always, is my good friend, Elliot Gilliland. Elliot.
Hey, third time.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So we're going to get right into it, but before we start our main discussion here, just want to put a little plug out there for our friends with Jobs with Justice. On Saturday, July 20th at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast Cooch, just a few blocks away from the studio here, from 7